John Clayton. Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And joining us in the Venue Kings hotline, Tim Booth from AP. Mariners back in town and struggling against a Tiger team that beat them in Detroit over the weekend, 2 out of 3. Last night, get the 3-2 victory. And I don't know, Tim, you see this team coming back from just a crazy 7-game road trip. Do you sense a little fatigue in that lineup?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, think about everything that they've gone through in the last, the last 10 days, basically, between, the road trip that started on the high of Paxton's no-hitter, and then, you get to Detroit and you have a rain out and have to play a doubleheader, and then Robbie Cano breaks his hand and you think you're without him for 4 weeks, and then you go make up the game in Minnesota and then come home and get home at 3 a.m. and wake up to news that Cano's being suspended for 80 days. I mean, I think there's got to be some level of exhaustion by this team right now, and they kind of desperately need a little bit of an off day here, but they're not going to get one for a while. I guess the fortunate part is that they play so many home games during this stretch right now, but I think you're right. I think this team is kind of tired at the moment and could definitely use maybe a couple of easy games, maybe quit with these one run games that are decided late. And kind of have just a little bit of a mental break.
Yeah, no question. But that's the problem right now. That doesn't seem to be in the cards. And, they're starting to be at the beginning stages of going through what they went through last year, which is having the Tacoma shuffle of pitchers coming up and going back down and all that stuff, because now it's not as bad as last year, but some injuries are starting to creep into the staff.
Yeah, and I think they've got, at least from a pitching standpoint, I think they have a little bit more depth this year in Tacoma that they can call up guys who have a little bit more of a track record than, it seemed like last year they were just calling up whoever was healthy and throwing them out there and seeing what would stick. Casey Lawrence last year, and this year so far has gotten some major league experience. So if you need a turn there, Chasen Bradford has been kind of a nice surprise in being able to pitch well out of the bullpen. And then you get a guy like Ryan Cook coming up yesterday, who's just a fantastic story of everything that he's overcome to get back to the majors. This guy was an all-star 6 years ago in Oakland. You had him sitting down in Tacoma sort of waiting for his opportunity to come back up. So I think if they do get to that point, at least from a reliever standpoint of having to do that Tacoma shuttle again, there's a little bit more depth there. The question, the worry is if you have to start doing that with your starters, then where do you go?
Yeah, no question. Yeah, because the bullpen, taking some big hits with injuries. And then, of course, the disappointment of Juan Nicasio, because Juan has been a major, major disappointment.
Yeah, you invested a lot of money this offseason in making sure that he was going to be your eighth inning guy and your bridge to Edwin Diaz in the ninth, and he hasn't been there so far. Whether it's the velocity for a while seemed to be down, lately it's been his location. Everything's been middle of the plate, getting huge chunks of the plate against hitters that are going to make you pay if you miss like that. He's got to get it figured out, and he's got to be able to be at least serviceable in the seventh inning, preferably the eighth inning, so that you're not relying on Nick Vinson as much in the eighth inning. They've got to get Nicasio figured out. Otherwise, that everything that they tried to build with that bullpen coming out of spring training doesn't work if you don't have him pitching in high leverage situations, whether it be the seventh or the eighth inning.
Yeah, and that's the big challenge there. Now, it does look like Nelson Cruz may be able to play tonight, but how have you seen this lineup now without Robinson Cano?
Well, it's tough just because you lose Cano on Tuesday, and then to the suspension, and then Nelly gets hit in the foot that night, and then he only plays, he only gets a couple of at-bats that game. So I don't know if we've got a feel yet for how exactly this lineup will be structured and how long this lineup can be if you don't have Robbie in there. I think the big question is going to be what kind of pitches do the sort of that middle combo of Gene Segura, Mitch Haniger, and Nelson Cruz see when those guys are in there, because I think they've kind of settled on Haniger being in that three hole, and Cano just kind of provided protection for both of those guys around him, because you knew Gene Segura knew he was going to get better pitches to hit because Cano was sitting behind him, and I think you had a better table setter in place for Cruz coming up behind Cano. So I how that all shakes out, I think, is going to be what sort of is determined over this next week. Is that the way it needs to be structured? Do they need to maybe consider moving Kyle Seager up to three and dropping Haniger to five? How that all plays out, I think there's been so little opportunity because of Nelly's foot, getting hit on the foot and having to sit down for a couple days to really get a feel yet for how the structure of that will end up being. But I think that the next week will be very telling in how that all gets set up.
What do you think has happened right now this year for home field advantage? I know this team has not been home much. I mean, it's played so many more games on the road, and this is a good stretch, against teams with losing records. And naturally, they did have the problems with the Angels and the Astros, and they're a little bit, they've reached a point right now where they've scored as many runs and has given up as many runs. But they're resilient, but they don't seem to have that home field edge so far this year.
Well, I think that's mostly schedule-based. You open the season against maybe the best team in the American League in Cleveland. You had the Astros in for four games, which, so far has proven that the Astros might have the best rotation, maybe the best rotation we've ever seen. You had the Angels in here with all of the hubbub about Ohtani and him going out there and pitching fantastic. So, the schedule... I see what you're saying, John, but I think mostly it's been a schedule situation so far. They've played some pretty good teams at home through the first, month and a half. This stretch coming up is key. They've got to take advantage of having Detroit in here, and they have to take advantage of having Tampa in here, and they've got to take advantage of having the Rangers in here. During this stretch, they've got 16 of 19 at home right now. They play another 16 games at home between the middle of June and just before the All-Star break. You've got Boston coming in at that point, but the rest of that home schedule during that time isn't exactly the big, the world beaters of the American League. The opportunity for them to sort of, as you said, get that home field advantage feel is right now and as we get into June, because you're playing teams that if you're going to be a playoff contender in the American League, you should be beating more often than not at home and winning those series pretty decisively.
No question about it. But there has been some good things. I mean, you've seen certainly a nice bounce back by Kyle Seager. Ryan Healy, after being on the DL, has really come back and hit the ball well. And they're still pretty good in the outfield.
Yeah, I think the one thing with the eventual move of D. Gordon to second base is I think defensively they're actually going to end up being a better team. D. Gordon's a really good second baseman. He was a Gold Glover 2 years, 3 years ago in Miami. And Guillermo Heredia is a fantastic center fielder. And I think as much as D was getting the feel for playing center field and was picking it up quite well, I think overall you're probably a better defensive unit with D. Gordon at second base and Guillermo Heredia playing full time in center field. So I think that's one thing to watch over these next few weeks is as D's making the transition back to second base. I think defensively, this is going to end up being a pretty good team, and that's a huge benefit when you have a pitching staff that has as many questions as they have, and frankly, as many gives up as many runs and hits as this pitching staff has at times so far. You're going to have to win some 7-5, 8-6 sort of games. And the fact that you have such a good defense, potentially with Gordon at second and Heredia in center, I think is a definite benefit for this team.
Yeah, no question. And that's one of the big challenges that they have overall. And, of course, it'll be interesting to see how it goes this weekend. Felix Hernandez on the hill tonight. Tim, I'm sure you'll be at the game for AP, and I'll probably see you next Thursday over at the OTAs.
Yep, you will, John.
Okay, that sounds good. Next, Tim Booth from AP joining us on the Venue Kings Hotline. Coming back, we'll start to take out the grade book. We'll start to grade everything on the report card. That's coming up next. This is the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
2 hours every day, 10 to noon.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app. It's time for the report card with the professor.
Each day at 11:15, we bring out the report card to grade some of the silly, the smart, the dumb, the crazy, the wacky, the intelligent, some of the things that are going on in sports as far as what happens. Because, again, there's just so many weird things that we need to get into, and that's what we do. We try to go ahead and see what your thoughts are on that. And, of course, that's a report card. We'll attach a grade to it and then go like that. So, Maura, what do we have so far as on the report card?
Well, first up, we have Terrell Owens. You know, he's never one to mince words. He was on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas the other day and had some strong opinions about Cowboys coach Jason Garrett.
How can you, at some point, you know, keep allowing a coach to be the scapegoat or the players to be the scapegoat for what's not happening, especially when you have a head coach that's supposed to be offensive-minded. They're supposed to, you know, direct and lead the team to, you know, to where a team hasn't gotten in a number of years. And they pretty much have been, they've been at a standstill under the head coach of Jason Garrett. I just don't understand why this guy still has a job.
I mean, Tio, it's like, first off, I mean, how many complaints did you have about the Hall of Fame and you finally made it in there? Now you have Jason Garrett and you're saying that, you know, his success is just not there in getting a team to the Super Bowl. Now, I mean, Tio, I mean, you made it to a Super Bowl once. Oh, you made it, you know, you made it. But again, how his judgment right now, this is a D. A bad D, because it's like, okay, now you're calling for Jason Garrett to get fired. I mean, Jason does a pretty decent job. He's had some pretty good success. And I don't know what you're technically complaining about, because, you know, is this going to be, I just don't get it.
Well, maybe he's just trying to stay in the headlines, because he also posted some Instagram videos of himself working out with hashtags like opportunity needed. He's tagging the NFL. He's saying stay ready, never lost it. And telling Odell Beckham to come work out with him.
Hey, OBJ, Dez Bryant, I know y'all in L.A. Come on, let's get this work. Hit me up on the cell, 678-977. You got the rest.
Apparently he's saying that he wants to be the only Hall of Famer to be an active player, and he thinks he could make a comeback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I remember talking to him the last time, I think it was 2 years ago, which was his first year of eligibility. And I asked him, it's like, hey, I kind of get the feeling listening to you that you haven't given up the idea of playing, even though we're now going to be voting on you for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And he basically confirmed that he still has the desire to go out there and play some football. But this is almost like Kurt Warner at the age of 44 trying to say, yep, it's time for me to get back into the game. I was thinking about doing it, talked to a coach about it, and naturally nothing happened. But kind of wonders, like, what are we really thinking about here? It's like, at some point it ends. And I guess with Tio, it never ends, and he's never satisfied. That's the thing that's so crazy about Tio. It's like everything has to be, an extra challenge. And why that is, I have no idea.
Well, I guess that's how you have that competitive fire that he had as a player, but sometimes it works against you.
No, that did. No doubt about it.
Next up, we have our podcast guest this week, Warren Sharp, the football analytics guy, actually pointed out something funny on Twitter today. The Colts still had pages for Chuck Pagano and Rob Chudzinski on their official site listing them as coaches, despite firing them back in December.
Oof.
So he pointed that out on Twitter and then updated that their faces were gone, but their write-ups were still there. And then now everything's gone. So he called attention to it and they fixed it. But almost 6 months later, they still had them up there.
That's pretty bad. And it's funny because, I'm going through the database. I've been trying to update the 90-man rosters. And I'm just amazed how many mistakes I'm finding now in the rosters on team sites. Because, they'll have guys that have been there for maybe have been cut and, not moved off the roster. And it gets to be a little bit crazy because, again, you want the accurate roster coming from the team. And there's some teams that don't have an accurate roster. I still remember, like, New Orleans sometimes, they get, like, 3-4 weeks behind. Now, this year and this week, I mean, they've been totally and completely up to date. But it drives you crazy when you're trying to get an accurate roster and then figure out, now, how come I have 91 guys? Like, in fact, the other day, I was trying to compare my database to the Steelers, and they had 91 players on the roster. You're only allowed 90. So something has to give.
Have you noticed any links between the teams that don't update their rosters well and teams doing poorly?
No, I mean, you actually have some teams. Now, of course, the Colts did poorly, obviously, this past year, but that was because of Andrew Luck more than anything else. But no, they're it's bad organization. Sometimes it shows, but doesn't necessarily show in their roster.
All right. I have a fun one here. I noticed a producer that I used to work with at our sister station in Denver, 104.3 The Fan, posting Mike Evans and our friend Mark Schlereth this morning apparently had a guest in the studio, which was a cockroach. And they had some fun with Schlereth trying to catch it live on air.
Seconds to catch right. this cockroach, and then we got to move on.
All right, here we go.
Here we go.
Will he do it?
I'm under the table, guys. Oh, I should have it on film, but I'm not filming this. I'm just, oh, come here, you little son of a. Oh, I got it. Oh, yeah. My, oh, he's crazy. Oh, what are you going to do now?
The clock's ticking.
Hello now.
I got him. I got him.
Come on.
Now, how am I going to slide this under there? To get the Mr. Cockroach.
What's he going
to
do with Mr. Cockroach after he catches him?
I don't know.
What if it bites you?
Well, are cockroaches, like, are they poisonous at all? Or?
No.
Bah, bump, bump, bump. There it is.
You got it?
Yeah.
He got it!
He got him! Yes!
Hold on.
Woo!
Way to go, Stink. Stink gets the cockroach. How about that? I mean, I have to give him an A, and I love the fact that they put Mission Impossible music behind that to make it even more challenging. I mean, that was a good job and a good bit. But now, I mean, you worked at that station. How do you get cockroaches in Denver?
I don't know. I thought they liked the humidity more. I never saw any when I lived in Colorado. Plus, that's a really nice building. They're in a building full of suites. Overlooking, they have like a duck pond with fountains. So I don't know if someone left some food to rot in that studio for a long time or what, but they shouldn't have cockroaches.
No, that's strange. But a good job by Stink being able to get that thing fixed up. A big challenge, but he was able to match up against the challenge. So I have to give him an A. I mean, you can't give him a bad grade when he was out there crawling on the ground and trying to get a cockroach, and he actually got it.
Yeah.
I mean, when an offensive lineman can catch a cockroach, that's pretty quick hands.
All right. Good job, Schlereth. Next up, we have Adam Schein from NFL.com wrote an article thinking about how LeBron has kind of had to put the Cavs on his back and not gotten enough help from his surrounding cast. He said, heading into the 2018 NFL season, here are a few one-man bands across the NFL, guys that kind of have to do the same as LeBron. And Russell Wilson ranked number one on his list. How do you grade that?
Yeah, I have to give that a B, B plus, because I think it's an astute observation. I mean, when you think about last year, which was absolutely incredible, and that's why, you know, when people started to add that extra criticism of Russell in December and thinking, well, something's wrong here. I mean, he scored all but one. He was involved in all but one of the touchdown plays on offense. He was the one that led the team in rushing. He still had a good year passing and went to the Pro Bowl. I mean, I don't know what more you can ask. Obviously, I mean, they've got to have more coming up. So I guess in the sense of LeBron, if the guys can cooperate, then they can at least get some better play out of this.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with how much he had to do last year. It's hard to argue with that assessment. Some of the other guys on his list are Khalil Mack for the Raiders, LeSean McCoy for the Bills, Justin Tucker for the Ravens, the kicker, getting the nod of being the LeBron of his team. Geno Atkins for the Bengals and Aaron Rodgers for the Packers.
Pretty good, yeah. I mean, the quarterback is the one that really tends to get a little bit more attention in the NFL, because if you have a quarterback, he can make so many more things better when things aren't going well. Okay, what else do we have?
That's it for Grace today, Professor. We'll move to text.
Of course, what we'll do next is we'll get your text questions, but of course, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, text us at 710-710. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
2 hours every day, 10 to noon.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
So the Arizona Cardinals make a trade. They get Jamar Taylor, cornerback from the Cleveland Browns, and a swap of seventh-round picks. Also looks like they threw in a sixth-round pick in 2020. We'll get more details of that as time goes on. Odell Beckham Jr. looks like he is going to attend next week's OTAs for the New York Giants. We are taking your text questions at 710-710. Maura, what do we have?
All right, 425 says, hey, John, since the M's do have a gold glove second baseman in D. Gordon, do you think it's possible the Mariners would void Cano's contract?
I don't think they can. I mean, I'm not the baseball lawyer. I don't know the rules as much, but it's one where I still think it's guaranteed. I don't know if this jeopardized the guarantee at all. If that's the case, that might be a big consideration, because, you wonder down the line, because, I mean, you can see Ken Rosenthal was saying that next year they may start to make that transition away from second base and put him at first base, which everybody kind of thought was coming. And at some point, maybe it would be getting him to be the DH, say if they don't bring Nelson Cruz back. So there may be a transition there. I mean, that's a big contract, but he's also a great player. I think you can see how successful the team can be when he's hitting so well. But I think, I just don't think that you can do that.
360 wants to know, if we do lose Earl Thomas, would Seattle consider signing Trey Boston?
No, I don't think that's worth it, because I don't think he's all that good. This would be his third team. Sure, he's one of the three or four best safeties on the market, but nobody's going for him. I know he's making some visits this week, but no, I don't. Trey, again, remember, this team has safeties. If you let Thomas go, I mean, you still have Maurice Alexander as a backup. You still have two draft choices from last year that don't have a chance to play if Earl Thomas is here. So they don't need to add Trey Boston. They don't need to add Kenny Vaccaro. They need to see if they can get Thomas in here, and then if not, they work out one of the rookies from last year.
206 says, Professor, how do you like what Gruden is doing for the silver and black this year?
I think coaching-wise, I think it's going to be excellent. What I wonder about is him in charge of personnel. I still get the feeling that he's getting too many old guys out there. I mean, they got about 14 guys now in their 30s, and that can be a little bit scary. And, they've taken a lot of chances on players that have some character issues. That's not good, because, again, what you want is that general manager that goes out and gets the players for you and gets you independence. But right now, that's his job. So that's the one concern that I have. Is he going to be good enough as a personnel guy, because he's got complete control of the organization for the next 10 years?
206 says, Professor, is there a sizable difference in contract payment between, say, the first five picks in the draft and where the Seahawks took Rashad Penny?
Oh, yeah, it's huge. Because now you're talking, $23 to $25 million signing bonuses and deals that are, $7 million. Almost $8 million a year, to where they get Penny and they get him for 5.9 to sign, and a little bit under $2 million. So no, that's a huge difference as far as it. And of course, I mean, the one advantage that they have, if Penny's good and they can't get a long-term deal after 4 years, they can put the fifth-year option on him.
All right, the 360 wants to know what you think the chances are at this point of Seattle reaching out to Dez Bryant.
I don't think so. I don't think it's worth it. I think that, sure, he's a big receiver, and sure, the talent would help out, but I don't think that they want to go through the headaches that can be Dez Bryant. Because, again, the headaches were one of the reasons that they let him go. You get just tired of the blow-ups in that. I mean, they certainly did not like the blow-up that Richard Sherman had, and that didn't go over very well. So I think that you'd be adding more headaches, and this team wants less headaches. And, again, they let a great player go in Richard Sherman, who was a great person, but also it's like... Dez can be a headache, and you don't want it.
206 says, hey, Professor, what do you think the 49ers record will be this year with all that they've added?
I think 7-9, maybe 8-8 at the best. I still don't buy the idea that they're a playoff team yet. I still think that they've got another off season where they really still need to get some more talent. I mean, defensively, they still... questionable pass rush. They still have some issues on the offensive line. I don't know if they got better with McKinnon at running back as opposed to Carlos Hyde, and they still have some needs at the receiver position.
509 says, would you rather have Tim Tebow as the starting quarterback of the Seahawks or Russell Wilson as the starting second baseman for the Mariners?
I would rather have Wilson as the second baseman, because I don't want to see Tebow on the football field. I mean, he's so bad as a quarterback. It just would be horrible to watch. That it would be tough transition, because how do you go from being a $21.9 million quarterback to being a 400, really somebody that's going to be earning minor league money? But no, I don't want to see Tim Tebow on the football field whatsoever. Only in college.
Breaking Ashley's heart. She's a country fan and she's a Tim Tebow fan.
Oh, well, there's a similarity.
It's okay, John.
I know.
The 425 says, is DeMarco Murray still a possibility for Seattle?
No. No, they've got their running back in Penny. They've got enough running backs right now. They're not going to go out and get a veteran. They really had the plan all along to go ahead and get the rookie. So, no, there's no chance right now to get Murray.
509 wants to know your Stanley Cup Finals prediction and who you think will ultimately win.
I don't know. I'm going to go with the Graz and kind of just root for the Vegas, because, I mean, they're two games away from advancing to the at least to the Stanley Cup, and it'd be just great to see an expansion team do something that you never, ever expected them to do.
253 wants to know if you see the Hawks getting swept by the Rams this year.
No, I still think they win the home game. I mean, I know they didn't last year, but no, I still think that they can get that victory in it. So, and again, it's going to be competitive. I mean, remember, I mean, this is still a team that has to come back. I know the Rams are going to be better on defense, but no, I still think that Seattle gets the win up here.
All right, the 206 wants to know, Mr. Professor Clayton, what's your opinion on Cincinnati chili?
Like, what was it, a five-way? Five-way chili is good.
It's they put it on spaghetti.
Yeah,
and I think
yeah.
It's beanless.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's great. Yeah. I mean, particularly if
like
you get the five-way. I think it's called five-way. But
nice.
I like it. No, that's really good chili. That's one of the great parts of going to Cincinnati is getting the chili.
The 623 says, hey, Professor, I have a cockroach problem at my office. Jesse James Comics, can you send Schlereth my way?
It would be too costly. I think the price he's going to charge now that he's been a successful cockroach killer is just going to be extravagant. So, yeah, I don't know if you can afford a stink right now.
206 wants to know, where does Adrian Peterson fit?
With some team, I think right now you might want to think about moving on, but there's still some football left in him. But I don't see him getting anything now until a couple injuries happen, either in mini camps or in training camps. Because, you know, he's 34 years old. You can see that. I mean, I know that New Orleans keeps saying with the suspension of Mark Ingram, yeah, they might consider bringing him back. But I just don't see it because, again, he doesn't fit in that offense because he's more of an I formation guy and not a guy that, really wants to run out of shotgun.
253 says, John, when a player is suspended or moves to a new team, how does that affect local and or national endorsements and commercials? Thank you, Dave.
Well, I mean, obviously it's going to cause a problem on the local endorsements. I mean, like, for example, I mean, you wonder what happens with John Ryan if he gets cut, which is more likely. So you lose the local. It may change a little bit of the nationals, but, there's such a small percentage of guys that are good enough to be able to merit getting the national commercials. And usually if you're getting a national commercial, you're untouchable. They're not going to move you.
253 wants to know, hey, John, who do you expect to lead the league in receiving yards this upcoming season?
Still think Antonio Brown because I think you're going to see extra motivation from Ben Roethlisberger. Brown's been such a good receiver now. He's been the best in football. Julio Jones, I think, is going to be right up there. It's going to be pretty much the same group. And then, of course, we'll see how it goes with Odell Beckham Jr. At least he's showing that he's now caring enough to be there for the offseason, at least the OTAs, and trying not to make too much of a problem.
253 asks, what are the odds of a Fetty starting at right tackle?
About 98%. The only way that he doesn't start at right tackle if there's going to be a George Fant advancement where George can come in and kind of surprisingly win the job.
509 wants to know, where does Chris Carson stand in the Seahawks lineup currently?
I'd say right now, I mean, he's the opening day starter. I mean, we'll see how it goes with Rashad Penny, but Rashad is still going to be competing for that job and eventually will get that job, but don't count out Chris Carson. He's a good back, and don't be surprised if you see both guys in the backfield at different times.
Along those lines, 253 wants to know, what rookie will have the biggest impact for the Seahawks this year?
It's going to be Rashard Penny. I mean, because, again, he's the guy that could come in here, gain anywhere between 600, 800, maybe 900 yards. And if he can do that, that's going to be a big impact for this team. Second one, I think, is going to be Michael Dixon, because Dixon, of course, is just so unique with his kicking ability that, he's so good that he may be able to cause some turnovers.
All right, that's it for text today,
okay.
Professor.
And you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we chat with Dave Crosby.
John Clayton.
2 hours every day, 10 to noon.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And joining us right now is Dave Crosby. What's going to be an interesting weekend, and I guess it all kind of starts out, Dave, with the NBA, the Cleveland Cavaliers on Saturday. And I don't know, the more I see of the Cavs, the more I like the Celtics.
John, why do you hate the Cavs?
I don't hate the Cavs.
I think you do, John.
No, I don't.
What is it about?
What's that?
I think I know what it's about.
What's that?
It's Cleveland.
What about Cleveland?
Like, we were talking yesterday on our show, and we brought up your name, and it was in reference to the league announcing Hard Knocks.
Yeah, yeah.
And saying it was the Browns. And I think Bob said, Clayton's not going to like that because he hates the Browns. And I said, you know why he hates the Browns, don't you? He's a Pittsburgh guy.
I think it's
Pittsburgh
more,
guys hate everything Cleveland.
Not really.
It's embedded.
No, it's more one winning season or one playoff season since the franchise got the expansion team in 1999.
Yeah, but that's no reason to hate them because they're bad.
No, it's like...
You hate them because they're from Cleveland.
No. No, it's
You're a Pittsburgh guy.
I'm a neutral.
It's in your blood, John. Yeah, you can try and walk away from your Katra, your spirit, but you're a Pittsburgh guy. You're not going to like anything Cleveland.
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. Tell me what you like about the Browns.
No, we're talking about the Cavs.
Name me the 10 things that you like about the Browns.
Well, name me the 10 things you hate about the Browns.
What's that?
What are the 10 things you hate about them?
One win in 2 years.
Why do you not? No, but that's not hateable.
What's that? No, I don't hate them. It's just that there's a reality. Bad franchises are bad franchises. I think John Dorsey's going to come in there and do good things. I've always said good things about Hugh Jackson. I think that Baker Mayfield has a chance to be a pretty good quarterback in time. And so, I like those things. But
are you excited the Browns are on Hard Knocks? See?
Not really. I mean, let's put it this way. They've had one win in 2 years.
Yes, you keep saying that, John, but being bad is not a reason to hate someone.
I don't hate him.
You're a compassionate person, John.
I'm a compassionate person.
You always have been. I've known you for 30 years.
Let's put it this way. I've been to Cleveland enough times that I've always felt sorry for their fans.
See? There's always the Pittsburgh guy in you coming out again.
What? I'm feeling sorry for their fans?
Because Wassel was asking me, said, was there ever a time where Cleveland, referring to the Browns, competed with Pittsburgh? And I said, before Chuck Knoll got there,
right,
the Browns owned Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm, totally.
Owned them for years. And John's formative years were taking place. But anyway, you asked me about the Cavaliers.
Yes.
And we'll see what happens now. This is just a home court series or not. All from Cleveland's perspective, that's all I got to say is we lost the first two on the road, win the next two at home. We still got to get one game in Boston. That hasn't changed. But obviously, it's a key game tonight. I mean, you go down 3-0. Even Cleveland, who came back on the Warriors down 3-0, would be in a deep hole, and it would be a remarkable accomplishment for the Celtics, considering the players they're missing to get to the finals. Though I have a hard time thinking they would have a shot against either the Warriors or the Rockets in the finals. But obviously, tonight's Game 3 is huge. It's back home in Cleveland. The Cavaliers and LeBron James have the best player on the floor, have the most experience. I'm going to wait to write them off to see what happens in this game.
Yeah, but I just you can see the fatigue factor, and still I think there's a big coaching gap with Brad Stevens being the coach of the Celtics. I mean, the guy's remarkable.
LeBron is a terrific coach. What are you talking about?
Well, LeBron's great. And
I'm saying he's a good coach.
Yeah. The sad part is that here's LeBron not getting a chance to get back to the finals, and probably what's going to be his final games in Cleveland.
That remains to be seen as well, though that could very well be the case because it's sort of a mission accomplished thing, and there's going to be a lot of intrigue. That's going to fuel the NBA. You think the NFL offseason has got action? I mean, that's going to fuel the NBA's offseason in a big, fat way, and he's not the only guy who's going to be out there, but obviously the most attractive guy. Like I said, let's wait before we bury the Cavs. This is the team that came back from 3-0 in the finals.
Mm-hmm.
This is a team that shouldn't be written off yet.
Yeah, but what my eyes.
You had them written off in the last series, John, because of your hatred for everything Cleveland.
I sided with you. I think it was on a Friday, right before the series started. That I thought that they were coming back and would advance.
You did.
How can I hate him like that?
I don't know. It's bizarre to me.
How can you not like LeBron? LeBron's sensational.
Well, I certainly agree with that. I mean, he's the best player in the game and the best player the game has seen up until this point, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that'll be one to watch.
But that's one to watch for sure.
Yeah, what do you think, Golden State and Houston?
I was really surprised at Game 2 in that series, and I think this is, again, the same sort of thing. The Warriors coming back home now. They got what they needed in Houston. They got the split. Which is what you're looking for in this series. So, now in that series, all the odd number games are huge. Game 3 will give whoever gets it the advantage. I didn't think Houston had the game to beat the Warriors. In fact, I thought that they might be in danger of being swept. But one of the storylines that came out of that game, too, is that Steph Curry, besides his first game back, has not been the same guy. And Houston has taken advantage of that. So I'll be very curious to see what he does in this Game 3. But I would expect the Warriors to jump on them early and reestablish dominance in this series. But remember, it was a successful start to the series for the Warriors when you can get one or two on the road. Now, in the National Hockey League playoffs, that doesn't seem to make any difference at all. No. You've got a series in the East, Washington and Todd Lewicki's Tampa Bay Lightning. They're 2-2 in the series, John. All games won by the road teams.
That's remarkable, isn't it?
It's bizarre.
Yeah, it really is.
It's bizarre. So, and then you got Vegas looking, as you pointed out yesterday, looking to get to one game away from the Stanley Cup Finals. Got the Mariners series with Detroit. Got the Preakness. Got a lot going on this weekend.
Yeah, tell me about the Preakness. I mean, it looks. Is Pimlico just about ready to end its run with the Preakness?
I don't know. It's 120 years or something like that.
No, but I'm just talking about how old the facility is and how bad the facility is.
Oh, they may do. It's a dying industry in terms of live racing. So, no, I think there's still some tradition to it. I mean, Belmont is just as old. Churchill Downs was remodeled, but it's just as old. So, I mean, it's about remodeling it. I think it's sort of a classic venue, and the weather's been bad, like it was for the Derby. That favors the horse that won the Derby. I think we're going to see a Triple Crown this year, and nothing has happened to change my feeling in terms of the last couple of days. So, especially if it's an off track, as good as that horse Justify was in the Derby, he's got to be a 1-5 favorite to win on an off track.
Mm-hmm. What would that mean for the sport to be able to have a Triple Crown?
Well, they had one 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and it just it was exciting. But, you know, it's what it is. It didn't have it. It's not going to all of a sudden turn millennials into horse racing fans. So it's always a positive for that third race when it happens. But horse racing is in its niche, which is a fairly small niche in the sporting spotlight these days.
Mm-hmm. Which is sad because, again, it's.
Well, again, guys like you and me remember when it was a big deal.
Oh, I know.
Not just a big deal for the people who were there, but a big deal watching. I mean, another one is the Indy 500,
mm-hmm.
which is also this. I think that's also this weekend, is it not, or is it next weekend?
Next week.
But that's another one that they kind of did that in themselves, the Indy 500, by allowing a splinter racing league to start and kind of really diluted the sport. But that's another one that has lost a whole lot of international or a whole lot of national appeal over the past 10 or 15 years. But they can blame themselves for that.
Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, NBA has bounced back and really come on strong.
Yeah, personalities have driven the whole thing, and it most definitely has. And they had the draft lottery the other day, which is fuels their offseason as well as you know what guys are going to go in the draft. So they're flying high right now, despite the fact that it's still fairly non-competitive.
Yeah,
and there are only a handful of teams, and they're the exact teams that we thought they would be at the start of the year. I guarantee you, John, everyone at the start of the year, if they were told to pick a Eastern Conference, Western Conference final prediction, would pick these four teams. Perhaps the only exception would have been in the West. People might have picked San Antonio, but it doesn't seem to matter. The personalities are taking the day, and they've done a nice job of selling it. There's no denying it.
No doubt. And how much do you think Barkley and Shaq are really helping?
Oh, I think the fact that they got the best studio show helps a lot. You know, for me, a guy who's sort of soured on the NBA for obvious reasons, I've always watched that show. So it definitely is an asset. I don't think there's another sport that's got an asset in a studio show like that one, a signature show like that. I mean, you know, you think about baseball and there isn't one. You think about football, there isn't one. You know, there are three or four of them, and none of them necessarily stand out the way that one stands out.
No, it's just great. And again, they make it great drama because, I mean, they really get into the arguments.
They do. They do, and you got a great ringleader there in Ernie Johnson Jr., a great pro who keeps him going. But you know, those guys got thick skins, which is important, and they'll say whatever's on their mind, which makes it very compelling. And look, you know, we're in an era now where sports teams want the media to be their caddies and to always promote them and always be talk about everything super and everything like that. And the thing that separates that show is those guys are honest. When they see stuff in the NBA that they don't like, they dog it all the time. They play it the way they feel it. They're not trying to help sell tickets. They're not trying to be a partner. And it's what makes that show good, and it's what makes that show stand out.
And of course, what's on Bob, Grouse, and Tom today?
Our weekly visit with Mike Bowers was pushed back a day. It's today, and they're doing the player broadcast today, by the way, too. All ex players are doing the games on TV. No, Dave Sims is getting the day off after his first day back. Which he probably needs.
Yeah.
And then we're talking to noted Cleveland hater John Clayton at 2 o'clock.
Okay, well, that'll be good. So that comes up.
And then I'm talking to you tomorrow at 10, right?
That'll be correct.
All right, buddy.
Okay, so we'll be back tomorrow at 9 and Monday at 10. And, of course, Bob, Grouse, and Tom coming up next at from 12 until 3. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.